where marijuana isn't a cure, but what it can do, and surveys are starting to show now that it can spread out the time factors of, instead of they have to take two, like hydrocodone,
right,
every 4 or 6 hours,
right,
if they then have some marijuana in between at some point, it could spread out where maybe instead of 4 times a day of doing 2 pills, they maybe only need it once or twice.
Right. As topics like medical marijuana and death with dignity continue to gain popularity around the country, the case management industry must stay up front of these topics and more to be able to serve the patients that rely on them. The Case Management Society of America looks to do that, and I recently sat down with their executive director, Kathy Frazier, at their national conference in Austin to discuss exactly how an organization as large as theirs continues to provide education on topics that were once taboo. As always, thank you so much for listening, and be sure to tune in next episode when I talk to one of the biggest names in readmission prevention, Dr. Mary Naylor. I'm joined now by Kathy Frazier. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it. I know your schedule is wall to wall, so I appreciate you taking a little bit of time. We like to start off every episode the same way, and that's by asking our guests if there's something they can tell us that people might not know about them, maybe a fun fact or something outside of work that most people don't know.
Well, that's a great question. And I actually led off our board meeting, our CMSA national board meeting, with all our board members plus our management company, which I bought when I then became executive director of CMSA. But Fraser Imagineers is our rename of it, and we did that same thing. But the board and staff knew me so well, it made it harder. This is great. Well, I have a big rodeo history,
okay,
which seems very stereotypical Texas, but it really isn't. We don't all ride horses for work and keep them hitched up outside. But yes, I had a big rodeo period, and for years and years, and do love horses and wish I could ride the horse to work. But that's probably, I guess, the main thing outside of work, because with now becoming executive director, last July 8th was my first start date, and then buying the management company and changing then the name to Fraser Imagineers was about January 1st. So it's been a lot of outside work,
yeah,
and no horse time whatsoever, but at any rate, but maybe that's something people don't know.
Okay, great. You're a nurse yourself, correct?
Yes.
And mm-hmm. So how did you get your start in nursing?
Well, I was a child prodigy and began nursing 39 years ago, and I actually in high school still didn't know what I wanted to do, like when I was a junior. It's not like I just woke up and knew I wanted to be a nurse, but I was still debating, and I was thinking things like interior decorating, fashion design, but just didn't know, and none of it felt right. But one night, actually, I was coming back, as a high school senior, coming back from a dance, and came across a wrecked vehicle. And one of the girls in the car was the only one really injured, but had gone through the windshield and face all cut up.
Wow.
And they had been drinking, and she was very much a minor and actually was my next door neighbor, and just pleaded, and no, don't take me to the doctor. And she lived with her grandparents, not her parents. And she kept pleading. And so while she's pleading, I'm putting bandages on her face, but knew she needed to go see a doctor. And so, but just by the time I got her kind of bandaged up, that she had calmed down a little bit and talked her into going to for us to take her to the emergency room through that talking, and then got her settled in there and told her I'd help her with her, you know, grandparents and talking to them, etc. And after that whole process of coordinating that, I just knew this is it.
Yeah.
This is my calling to be a nurse. And I think, oddly enough, by what I was doing was care coordination, and with the talking and all, was it's like, it was that, you know, I did not know then was an odd kind of look into the future that I was destined not only to be a nurse, but to go into case management. Because sure. What I did that night with her, even though, I mean, it was hands-on, but with the whole coordination, she was not going to go to the hospital. She was hysterical, didn't want them to know. That was not best for her. And so I was a patient advocate right away, but then care coordination was coming in. So it's kind of oddly... Yeah. Oddly symbolic.
And did you work in the emergency department just really quickly?
Or I did. And first working then out of nursing school was in a rural hospital. And you worked everything. You were the only RN. And in fact, I'm graduate on a Friday and I start Monday. I'm still a GN, haven't taken my exams. And I was the only supposed to be RN without the license work in the whole hospital, the emergency room. Rural hospitals are tough. People underestimate them. You're it. And the ER, ICU, moms coming in to have babies, your regular med-surg floor, everything.
Right.
And so that was my first 7 years, I guess, until I moved back to Houston, Texas, and then back into, then went into hospitals still, but large hospitals. But that was the beginning and that kind of training. And I found people out there that did that. It either they got out of nursing completely, it just killed them, or they became really, really good nurses.
Yeah.
And so I stayed into nursing and hope I was a really good nurse, but I didn't quit, and it was great experience.
Yeah. And now you're the executive director of CMSA. Okay. How did you end up in this role here?
Well, I discovered case management, became a case manager about 24 years ago when I was a director of nursing, and I had three young kids. And as a director of nursing, when I'd gone into it, because I had just received my first master's, I decided, you know, yes, let me become a director of nursing instead of a floor nurse. At that time, I was working labor and delivery, and I received my master's. I'd come back in and decided to become a director of nursing, was offered that opportunity, and thought, perfect, you know, administration, director of nursing, nurses don't do anything. And that's what you think is a floor nurse. You just see them walking around every now and then.
Yeah.
And they're really not doing anything like we're having to do, even though we're clocking in and then we clock out and we're done until we come back. And so I became a director of nursing and had that position for about 2.5 years. But with three babies at home, I never, it was terrible because a DON works so hard, and it was 24/7. And we didn't have cell phones. So my home phone was ringing around the clock when I wasn't there. So it was pretty, pretty exhausting. And I could have handled it still, except I felt like then I was starting to neglect my kids, because you want to do it all, be a working mom, but then be there. And I told my administrator, I'm looking around, and they said, well, please, no, stay here. We want to open up our first case management department and for you to do it, and you can run it, and then we're going to spread it through the company. It was a national healthcare company. And so I said, no, I don't even know what a case manager is. I'm not going to do that. It's just hypocritical, because I've always complained when I would then get a boss who hadn't done anything before with that, and but they'd gone on and gotten their master's while they were, you know, just fresh out of nursing school with no clinical, but then they became your boss. So I said, I won't. And she said, well, please think about it. And I left and I didn't think about it again. But when I came back a few weeks later, back into her office, I was working every day, but I asked her, well, I haven't seen anybody coming around for your interviewing my replacement. And now I've actually gotten two offers. So yeah. I'm just giving you a heads up. And she said, but what did you decide about the case management? And I said, no, I don't know what it is. I'm not going to do that. It's not fair to y'all or the patients and to hire other case managers that'll probably be more experienced than me. She said, Kathy, we've received two resumes and they were both prison guards. And I said, no, I'm sure these were occupational health nurses. They work at a prison and they call themselves case managers. She said, no, these are ex-police officers that are now working in the prison system. Wow. And they are prison guards, but their title is case manager. And so they sent their resumes in. And so she said, obviously, nobody knows what a case manager is.
Yeah.
So you won't be any worse than anybody else, yet you know our system, you know everything we do, you are a nurse, you'll be fine, please think about it. So then I actually did and weighed it with the two offers I had had from two hospitals to be pure administration as an assistant administrator and thought, well, no, let me give it a try because I worried, am I getting even further away from hands-on? But then thought, well, it couldn't be worse than administration. And then I found, oh, my goodness, I'm making even more of an effect on patients. And I've been in it ever since.
Oh, excellent. You obviously are playing a big part in the conference that we're at currently with your role as executive director. You spoke the other day about an integrated case management model, and the CMSA actually created a manual. When I was doing my research, it said it was actually had to be adapted for use here in the United States. Uh-huh. What is integrated? What is that integrated model, and what needed to be adapted in order to be able to roll it out or provide it for members here?
Integrated case management is blending for that patient, taking care of both their behavioral health needs and their physical health needs, where there's still a problem, and historically where you treat the medical part, then you give them away, so to speak, to a psychiatrist or a psych nurse, a psychiatric case manager. With integrated, it's that just one case manager is taken care of, and they are trained to be able to work with a patient so you can have that care continuation. And with it starting, it did start in Europe. It was not created in the U.S., and it was brought over from Europe about, maybe 8 years ago with a former first edition that we had. But the group, none of them were authors, and they were contributors, but not authors. And we wanted to take, since we're CMSA and this is for case managers and we've been training, hearing what case managers are wanting, problems where this didn't really work well in their systems. We wrote the new book and just completed it. It's with the publisher, but we'll be starting training and rolling out in the fall that it was written. It's our CMSA, official CMSA integrated case management, written for case managers by case managers is then the title. And so we know what case managers out there need, and purely with that. And so I'm one of the authors, Rebecca Perez, who was one of the original authors in the other book and is just the queen of ICM. She is so knowledgeable, so fabulous, and all of her ideas and systems and we changed all of the factors and the grids and everything to actually be what people need and want. And then Corinne Latour, Dr. Latour from the Netherlands, was part of the original group. And her boss at that time through the University of Amsterdam, and he's since retired, But he was the lead on this and one of the originators and founders and creators. And so she was with him and trained. And so we asked her, and we were honored that she agreed. And she's a CMSA member and has been coming to our USA national conferences. And so she was our third author, which was wonderful. Yeah. And so we have a full chapter on global integrated case management and their practices and how it came about.
Oh, fantastic. And I noticed there's also quite a few sections based on technology. Mm-hmm. How is technology changing the case management profession?
To the point where they don't have to just have handwritten reports and doing into that, where with our technology of now with these placing and having software to place all of these action items, the risk factors, all of the information and the assessment guides for these patients, they can load them directly in, and then that technology can be part of their permanent records that then they're any of their other coworkers. And that's one of the wonderful things with technology, that if you go off, this is your patient, yeah, you go on vacation, and then maybe nobody else really knows what's going on.
Right.
But then, or somebody misses a meeting that you're having with the entire care group, well, they can just go right online and see it. So that's what we're trying to integrate as well.
Yeah. And are there any other technological advances or things coming out that you're particularly excited about, or things that you really think could be transformative in the industry?
One thing, and we're working in CMSA and with several other groups out of DC and software companies, is a new caseload calculator, which we had one on our website for quite a few years, but it really, well, to say it bluntly, has just been worthless. And so we're wanting to really, but it's a very, very difficult thing to create that a case manager can use, because there's so many various aspects of calculating caseloads because of whatever genre they're in. Are they in a hospital? Are they in an insurance company? Are they doing telephonic case management? Are they going out and seeing the patients, going with them to doctor's appointments, all that ways? And it's very hard to calculate that. So that's something we're starting up in August and working with software company and try and figuring out how we can meet the member's needs to be able to do, where it would be something that then the member could even put in those various ratios and be able to implement. So that's something we're doing, and our goal is to be hopefully done by the end of the year, but we'll see. But that's something I'm very, very excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would imagine that your members are pretty excited about the possibility of something,
yes,
like that too.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not only for the management side, but also just for the protection of them and,
right,
making sure that their workplace is conducive to actually providing good care.
And many insurance companies, many states, up in DC, many regulations, they're requiring, and with Medicaid population, they're starting to require that they do have some way of calculating that caseload.
Yeah.
And to make sure that the case manager isn't being overburdened to where really she can't do case management.
Right.
So, it's very important.
Along the same lines of some of the interesting topics that are being addressed in this year's meeting, there are a few courses or breakout sessions that might have been considered taboo in recent times. Mm-hmm. One of those actually includes the use of medical marijuana, or how, mm-hmm, not the use of it,
right,
but
right,
how it plays into the modern healthcare system. Mm-hmm. This is actually the second major trade conference in a row that I've been to that has had sessions focused on that, mm-hmm, because of the implications that a lot of people are just now having to start to think about.
Mm-hmm.
How does something like medical marijuana, that is becoming more legal across the country in some places, but not in other places, mm-hmm, but still doesn't have a really good way to regulate, potency or dosage or things, mm-hmm, like that. How does that affect a case manager's day-to-day operations?
It can make it very hard. And you're having even patients that are prescribed and it's legal in the state, like in California, that are and have their card. yet they also still need their pain medication.
Right.
And insurance companies turning down their pain meds because, well, they're on marijuana.
Right.
So we're not giving this anymore. So there's such a confusion about what marijuana can do with helping pain. And it's the pain that is why it's being brought out in the issue. And we are, in fact, I'm one of the presenters at tomorrow morning. First thing, it's on cannabis and opioids. And can cannabis help with that? And that came about, I was presenting at our chapter up in Grand Rapids, Michigan about 6-8 months ago, something like that. And I presented on the opioid epidemic.
Yeah.
And I present on that all over the world. And then when, and I was staying the whole day and hearing all the speakers. And a few speakers later, a woman then was presenting on cannabis.
Yeah.
And she's a had her master's in botany and actually graduated from my same university, Texas A&M, down here in Texas, obviously, and in College Station, but yet living in Austin. And I knew our conference was going to be in Austin, so but she was doing and was so interesting, and actually various parts that people didn't know of, because that is her degree in botany, that showing, okay, this type of marijuana, actually, you need to make sure through the medical, because it actually won't even do anything for you medically.
Sure.
It will just get you high. And then these parts of the plant, even to make sure it's this part of the plant, not another, that is the one, and how you process it. And it was so interesting. Well, after that, at the end of the day, and having a reception, all various attendees both coming up to us going, both of your presentations were so great, but y'all need to do one together. And then that's what, then I said, well, heck, we're having our conference in Austin, because I had then found that out and how easy that would be. And so we've created this one together because people are still confused, and payer sources are confused about where marijuana isn't a cure. It is not going to stop the disease process that it, or the severe arthritis that is causing the pain, but what it can do, and surveys are starting to show now that it can spread out the time factors of, instead of they have to take two like hydrocodone every 4 or 6 hours, if they then have some marijuana in between at some point, it could spread out where maybe instead of 4 times a day of doing 2 pills, they maybe only need it once or twice.
Right.
And then where that can help with that, because it actually, it alleviates the symptoms. A lot of people, you'll have oncology patients who have such a severe problem with nausea, they'll do the marijuana. And so people need to think of it that way, that marijuana is not curing cancer, and it's not going to prolong their life, but it's giving them a quality of life that, if it can help with that nausea, that you're not feeling that 24/7.
Right.
So that's where we want to educate people on that.
Sure. And I have other things I want to talk to you about, so I don't want to stay on this for too long, but because case managers are nurses first, is there some sort of disconnect in the caring, the nurse part of a case manager, and then the responsibilities that they have in a case manager that makes something like medical marijuana more difficult? Because maybe on the clinical side, they see that there are these effects, but are there certain things that hinder their ability to be able to care for someone if that's the best way as a case manager?
What we always remember and take into account is our main, our heart and soul and our main obligation is we are patient advocates.
Right.
So if what that is doing, and it's advocated, it's legal, it's prescribed, and we see it is helping that patient, then we can back it and we don't have a problem.
Sure.
I think sometimes what'll become a problem, and people may disagree with me, but at case managers, our average age in our profession, and we're trying to help this and get more millennials into case management, that our average age is 55 years old.
Sure.
What profession has that old of an average age? And sometimes being that age, and I'm then speaking for myself, I'm not going to insult anybody, but I know even myself, you can let your preconceived ideas that kind of come maybe with our generation, because then, you know, we're 70s and 80 kids, but especially then the 70s where I was, you know, you just think of marijuana a whole different way.
Right.
And just only remember the side effects because you weren't doing it for pain. It was to get high. And so we've got to get out of our own way and open up our minds, and which is something where if we can get more millennials in, I think, because I look at my own kids, they're more open to all these things.
Yeah.
And so we need to remember and not think, well, they just don't know, they're young. No, they're probably more open with this because we're the ones, we are older.
Yeah.
And we're bringing these things in, and for us to kind of be open with that.
Right. It's funny that you say that, because the other group that the age, it's, you know, skews that high is probably in politics. And so that's also a big reason for that.
Well, oh, that's funny. That's very clever. Yeah. And that would be those same age group.
Right,
too.
Right. Well,
oh,
and one thing too, another thing I wanted to ask you about that one of the breakout sessions addresses and kind of plays to what you were talking about where it is being rolled out in more places, but there are one regulatory hurdles that have to be overcome just because it's brand new, but also getting past people's own moral feelings about it is the whole idea of physician-assisted death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's becoming more legal in more states. I saw a statistic, I think actually today in California in the first year, just over 100 people, most of them very sick with terminal cancer, mm-hmm. you know, utilized it. How does that affect a case manager, and how does that affect the conversation they have to have? And it's a new process for everyone. So what kind of implications are there for that?
Goodness, God, that's a great question. And I don't have any personal experience with that. I've only read about it myself.
Yeah.
But that would be a very, very hard process to go through. But again, that case manager would be that patient's advocate. And if they know, well, obviously, that it's legal and that physician can do that, but that what would make it easier for the case manager is that, and if, obviously if you have a fabulous doctor, then that is the case that you know truly everything has been done. There is no way to prolong any quality of life.
Right.
They are going to die. There's not going to be suddenly if they find a cure, but this patient is too far gone for that to even help them, then you... If you feel then that is what's right, then I mean that it's just now they're in so much pain that there's no quality, then you could see it. But again, then that's too something that the nurse is still, or the case manager, whether she's a nurse, a social worker, a VOC, for that case manager, the case manager is still a human being too. And she may have a religious belief or a personal belief that this is just so wrong.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't believe in it. And then that makes it very, very difficult. And she's going to have to divide herself to either say, you know, I just got to pull it up and just do it. Or if it is so against that I refuse, then to voluntarily say, and that's what would be better, that I need to close this and have someone else reopen it that can do this to make that patient whatever's most comfortable for that patient and what can help them.
And we only have a few more minutes, so I want to make sure that we touch on some of the other initiatives that are going on. But one big question I have about kind of what we've been talking about here, why is it so important for CMSA to take on these new ideas? And how important is it for case managers that there's an organization that can help to educate them on things even that are still fluid?
Oh, it's so vitally important. I became an executive director because I had started when I became then a case manager, decided I'm going to do it. The very first thing I did, because I didn't even know what one was go online. And there wasn't many lines online at that time, 25 years ago. But I was able to pull up and Google one there at that time. But somehow I put in case management. And the first thing that came up was CMSA, Case Management Society of America. And then, so I clicked into there and then found they had a Houston Gulf Coast chapter. And I started going to meetings. And they're who taught me what a case manager is, how it was. It's still the case, and it's always been a problem in nursing or any healthcare field, but that you get all your training when you're in school, and then you're kind of on your own out there. You just learn somebody's policy procedures, get more experience, work in the ER, wherever you are. Well, case management being so much newer, and there it is not taught in school.
Yeah.
So you get out of school, and one of our past national presidents always, she used the term that it's like somebody with a magic wand says, oh, poof, you're a case manager. And that's kind of all we became. Yeah. I mean, that was how I started. That is most case managers, and you get no training. You're the only one. You're the first one hired often. Or if several are, nobody knows what they're doing. CMSA, everyone I met there, the case managers taught me everything really at that point to then have the courage to then when I'm talking, since I was an internal case manager talking to an insurance case manager, the courage to say, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm brand new with this, but I've been a nurse, blah, blah, blah. I was the director of nursing. I'm telling you what's best. This patient needs to be 3 more days or whatever. Yeah. And please tell me if I need to be doing something different as a case manager. And every insurance case manager that I ever talked to were so kind, so welcoming, so supportive and wanting to help that it was wonderful.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been as brave to even ask if I hadn't started with CMSA and those contacts, then joining that with the case managers with insurance companies that were all over the country. We're just talking on the phone, their link and knowledge, and then continuing with CMSA with our exhibitors. They're knowing what exhibitor, what vendor for getting that wheelchair that I know it'll work, or the physical therapy company that the patient says they can't get in for a month, yet I have friends now through CMSA that work there, and by golly, I'm getting them an appointment that week.
Right.
And so, and then we have with CMSA 24/7 educational resource library, because we have to have continuing ed units, and providing that knowledge to them for busy people that wish they could go to lunch and learns and things like that, but they don't have time.
Right.
They can do it at night if they want to, or the weekend, or on their lunch break while at work. They can get online, eat their sandwich at the computer, and do a course. And so it's so flexible, and then that makes that difference. Plus, we have 75-plus chapters growing around all over the United States. And so each of those chapters have local events and conferences. Most of them have annual conferences that they can go to, get like a full day's worth in a bang, meet the exhibitors, the networking, all of that. And then then they can travel. We have our annual national conference,
right,
which is so wonderful.
Right.
And we were close to 2,000 total here. I think the last count was like at about near 1,900.
Wow.
But we're growing.
Yeah.
And it's going to be bigger and better next year. And fabulous exhibitors and all of the workshops they go into. And then sometimes in your own workplaces, you're in a silo, and you only know what's there, and you only know this is my caseload, is this even fair? And you get somewhere here, and you can actually ask the questions you're wondering, because people here are from every genre of case management.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just an emotional support. It's an educational support, and you flourish.
Yeah.
And that's one addiction that we actually will push is coming to national conference. And because you come once, I just know from experience, you're addicted, because
right,
you feel energized and you know how that is helping your professional life.
Yeah. And it really is a diverse group. One thing that we're unfortunately not going to have time to touch on here, but I would encourage people to take a look at is how much you integrate case management who works within the confines of the military and the VA. Ooh. And there's an entire educational track. I actually talked to quite a few people today that work for the VA and are case managers there. And I even talked with someone about she had led a breakout group trying to educate acute hospital case managers on what it's like working in the VA to hopefully foster some understanding there. So I would encourage people to check out all of the different things that CMSA
it
does.
It is. Thank you. And yeah. I know you've been so cognizant of my time because then we've got I've got another meeting. But with you mentioning the military and the VA, I personally, and as executive director and all of CMSA and our board feels this way, will do anything for the military case right. managers. We really will, because they're doing everything for us. And then they're taking care of patients that put their life on the line yeah. and doing that for us. And the least we can do is provide this education and specialize. And then the same with the VA, because then they are taking care of our inactive military, but have done that. Right. And so that's why we brought back, we hadn't done in so many years then a military day, yeah. a full military and VA day, especially for them. And then we also have military and VA topics too, created through. And one of our advisors on the national board, we want to make sure we reach out. And just because someone's so busy, they can't run for an office or whatever, we want to make sure all groups are represented on our board. And we've now for quite a few, well, maybe about 4 years or so, one of our past board members is a colonel in the Air Force and a case manager.
Yeah.
And she's been involved with CMSA forever and served on our national board. And then when she got off, her term was done, we created an advisor position for military. And she is our military advisor. Yeah. So she worked within that. Well, this year then, we appointed a VA because we had no VA case management representation on the board, knowing that they face, and you know, in they're a hospital, but it's federally run,
right?
And it's a totally different aspects that they run into too, plus the very challenging issues with our veterans. And so we wanted a case manager to have a voice, to know what would work. So she's joined our board as an advisor, and then our newest that's just started, and that's our, and we'll be rounded out now with all our actual elected board members that come from all aspects, but we added a millennial advisor.
Oh, excellent.
And so that we have, because that fresh look that we're not adverse to at all, but often we just don't think about
right.
with our generation.
Right.
And so she started, and I'm so excited.
Well, and just as the very last thing here, we have had other directors of large trade organizations on, and just like some of those other groups, CMSA does a lot of public policy advocacy. Mm-hmm. The time in healthcare that we're in right now is incredibly uncertain, mm-hmm. but large organizations like yours and people that are out in the field providing care don't have the luxury of being able to take kind of a wait and see approach. Mm-hmm. So in leadership of the organization that you're in charge of, how do you lead to dictate public policy in a time where we're not even quite sure what healthcare in America is going to look like it within the next year or mm-hmm. two, even? How do you lead towards that?
We're actually meeting on the Hill September 14th, and we are nonpartisan. We don't care who's in office, if they're Republican or Democrat. We're patient advocates, and we know, I have always said, and that case management is the true healthcare reform. We're following that patient. We know they've already had two MRIs of the same body part, but they were in the emergency room, and then they went back to their doctor, and nobody knew that. And we go, when now a specialist orders an MRI for the third time, because there's no, we don't have electronic medical records they can all look at. The patient doesn't know.
Right.
Was that the same thing? And we can suddenly go because we know and we help get them to the specialist if we're on a case that, no, wait a minute, they've already had that twice. I can get it to you today.
Right.
I'm going to send you these records. You'll have it. You can review it before they get there, but they do not need a third unless you see something that you think was a problem and want something else. And you're looking at $5,000 to $10,000 saving right there on one patient.
Right.
Multiply that over the whole country.
Right.
And I mean, and that's just the tip of what we do. And so where we would, what we're going at our stance, we have our Model Care Act that goes through our standards of practice that is defining what really is a professional case management, because there is no title protection.
Yeah.
As when I, when my company where then I became the case manager, but they were advertising, and this was 25 years ago, that they got prison guards because that was their title.
Yeah.
I thought certainly this will, everyone will know who a case manager is. It will be fine in a few years. Well, 25 years later, no, they don't. And you have people that are not case managers calling themselves case managers that have no degrees. They sometimes don't even have a GED.
Right.
But then they're working for a company that's calling them a case manager. And then they bill Medicare or Medicaid and all the aspects. Insurance companies that this is case management, but it's not.
Right.
And so that's what we're pushing, is that this is, we've drawn a line in the sand. You have to have a professional case manager who is licensed and or certified in case management. They are registered nurses. They are social workers. They are some type of trained clinician in the healthcare field, and to be doing this job, and you need the government, then we'll save so much money if they let us have codes and payer sources to reimburse. Then it's that little reimbursement will pay over 20-fold that people then won't be tempted to hire somebody because they're cheap. They can get somebody to do it for minimum wage instead of paying someone that is a degreed professional, but you get what you pay for.
Right,
and
that's
our message to DC, and that's what we'll be carrying up there.
Oh, fantastic. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. I think there, that we could keep talking for quite a while. There's a lot to talk about, but I really appreciate you taking the time to sit with me, and best of luck with the rest of the conference and with the rest of the year.
Thank you. And you were great. You did your research so well. No, you were fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.